WMAL News at 7. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. If you're eager to get back to normal, the time is upon us. Mask mandates in Maryland and Virginia are lifted for fully vaccinated people effective today, in line with CDC guidance. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan.
Today is the day that so many of us have been waiting for and working toward. We finally do clearly see that light at the end of the tunnel.
They will still be required on public transit, in schools, and in healthcare settings in both states. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam says
businesses may still choose to require masks in their establishments, and masks will still be required in schools.
Also starting today, Maryland businesses will be able to reopen at 100% capacity if local jurisdictions allow it. Virginia will follow suit on May 28th, more than 2 weeks ahead of the date Northam originally set. Virginia will loosen some restrictions today. Restaurants can serve alcohol after midnight, and dining rooms can stay open later. Some national chains have already decided what their updated mask policies are.
Kroger, the nation's largest grocery chain, still requires masks for shoppers. The same with Home Depot and Starbucks. But Trader Joe's and Walmart say you can lose the mask if you're vaxxed. Still, there could be mask confusion. The Retail Industry Leaders Association says the CD policy creates ambiguity for retailers and could put retailers and their employees in incredibly difficult situations.
Fox's Chad Pergram. If you're running errands or going on a fun outing this weekend, you're probably wondering if you'll be able to get gas. As of last night, Patrick DeHaan with Gas Buddy says 88% of gas stations in D.C. were out of gas, along with 39% in Maryland and 42% in Virginia. If you want to know where you can find gas without driving around from station to station wasting it, you can go to tracker.gasbuddy.com. Colonial Pipeline says deliveries are going out, but it may take a few days for things to get back to normal. A bomb scare at Andrews Air Force Base last night.
The man drove up to the base late Friday afternoon and said he had a bomb in his car. Security personnel shut down the main gate and cleared the area. The man taken into custody and questioned. Bomb-sniffing dogs conducted a sweep of his vehicle and didn't find anything. Chris DeMeo, Fox News.
WMAL Sports, the Wizards clinch a spot in the playoff tournament with a 120-105 win over the Cavaliers. The Nats beat the Diamondbacks 17-2. Game one of the Capitals' first-round playoff series against the Bruins starts tonight in Capital One Arena. About 5,000 fans will be there. The puck drops at 7:15. And the spotlight is back on Baltimore today as 10 horses make the run in the second leg of the Triple Crown.
Medina Spirit has been given the green light to go out of the three gate for today's 146th running of the Preakness Stakes, the 9-5 morning line favorite, clearing additional drug testing to compete following a positive test after the Kentucky Derby. Medina Spirit looking to continue his Triple Crown bid with John Velasquez on the mount, and trainer Bob Baffert looking for a record-setting eighth Preakness win. Baffert's second entry, Concert Tour, coming out of the 10 post for today's run at Pimlico.
Fox's Matt Napolitano. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Out of the Beltway, heads up in Alexandria. There is a disabled vehicle. Left lane is blocked on the outer loop at Telegraph Road, exit 176. That's the only report of any incidents that I have right now on the Virginia side of the Beltway. On 66 in Fairfax County, there's no delays, eastbound or westbound, no construction or accidents. On 95 in Virginia, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound lanes are clear and the southbound lanes are clear. And if you happen to be going to any one of the airports, whether it's BWI National or Dulles, the roads leading up to the terminals are clear. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Storm Watch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny this morning, cool conditions to start your day, but temperatures will warm up into the mid-70s through the afternoon. We'll see a hit or miss shower, but for the most part, very isolated. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s. Clouds will increase after midnight, mostly cloudy into your Sunday morning. I think we'll be dry tomorrow morning, but we will have the possibility for some afternoon showers. Could even have a couple rumbles of thunder. Not quite as warm either. High temperatures around 70 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
Now, the Saturday morning update.
105.9 FM, WMAL. It's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. It is hour two when John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent and the chief political columnist at Newsmax TV and Newsmax.com, of course. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
The end of a controversy in the Republican Party, at least for about 18 months, and that is the election of Elise Stefanik to lead the House conference, replacing Liz Cheney. Give us a little bit of background on Liz Cheney. What happened from behind the scenes? You've got different perspectives from your sources on this, I believe.
Yeah, and my sources are Republican members of the House of Representatives, albeit speaking on background and requesting anonymity. One member said he wanted to vote against Liz Cheney in February, but he changed his vote to a yes and keeping her as conference chairman. Why? Because Kevin McCarthy, the Republican leader of the House, pleaded with the Republican lawmakers behind closed doors not to break up the team, not to give the media an opportunity to talk about division within the Republican Party. So this lawmaker changed his vote. And he said Liz Cheney would have been able to maintain her position if she kept her mouth shut. She insisted on talking about her vote for the impeachment of Donald Trump, how she held the former president in minimum high regard and would never support him for president again. Many of her statements on this subject, by the way, were put out on the official stationery of the House Republican Conference, creating a false impression that the conference was behind her in her anti-Trump stand. Eventually, it got to the point where Leader McCarthy and Republican Whip Steve Scalise of Louisiana would have a press conference with their number three leader, that is Liz Cheney, and the attention would be focused on her and her never-Trump philosophy. In the end, the conference decided to oust her, which they did by voice vote earlier this week. And as Shakespeare said, she was hoisted on her own petard. Enter Elise Stefanik of New York, a member of Congress who has a lifetime rating with the American Conservative Union of 43%. That's a lot lower than that of Liz Cheney at 78%. But the members saw in Congresswoman Stefanik someone who would get with the program and not make it about her. Now that's the leader they have. I might add that yesterday, Elise Stefanik was elected by a vote of 134-46 for the more conservative congressman, Chip Roy of Texas, who said she wasn't conservative enough.
And related to the Liz Cheney story, there was a story in the New York Times this week, talked about Republicans potentially defecting, a gang of 100. They seem to lump Tom Ridge into the story. You talked to Tom Ridge, and I guess the New York Times didn't quite get it right?
No, they didn't. And this was the case with other Republicans in the so-called gang of 100. Do they dislike Donald Trump? Yes. Were they upset by the ouster of Liz Cheney? You bet. Do they want changes in the way the grand old party does business without argument? Are they going to leave the party unless these changes are made? Well, not exactly. Tom Ridge, former governor of Pennsylvania and George W. Bush's Secretary of Homeland Security, is known as a centrist Republican who will tell anyone he never voted for Trump in either presidential election. Swell. And he signed this letter voicing criticism with the current Republican Party. But no sooner had this reporter, citing the Times, said he was one of those who would leave the party, then the former governor got in touch with me and made it clear. While he disagrees with the direction the Republican Party is going, he was not going to leave the party of Lincoln under any circumstances. Now, I found this is true with other members. Former Congressman John Leboutier of New York, someone long out of politics, said, "I'm still a Republican, but I don't like the party under Trump." Joe Walsh of Illinois, a former congressman from Illinois, said essentially the same thing. Now, it should be pointed out, this is what we call a one-day story. There was news about the Gang of 100. There was interest in the names that were on the list. And all of the names are people who are former office holders, former party officials, and no incumbent office holder. Now, if they were to be joined by, say, members of Congress or state legislators around the country in large numbers, well, that would be a major story, and it would be a wake-up call for the Republican Party. It's not.
We don't hear too much about ambassadorships and the process. I think typically when a new administration comes in, those who have been loyal to the new administration, supporting them during the campaign, loyal to the party, yep, generally get very nice jobs as ambassadors. And sometimes they don't have a lot of experience in diplomacy. What about the pending nomination for the ambassador to Japan, John?
That is a very important ambassadorship, if for no other reason than Japan is a longtime ally of the United States, and given its location in the Far East, near such hotspots as the People's Republic of China and North Korea and Taiwan, Japan is critical. President Biden announced last week he was naming as his man in Tokyo, Rahm Emanuel, former mayor of Chicago, President Obama's first White House chief of staff, a former congressman and White House political director under Bill Clinton. He's known for foul language. Sometimes it is said that if he does not use the F word in communicating his feelings with others, he has to speak in pantomime, and he had a rough go of it as mayor of the Windy City with racial upheaval and complaints about the police. But most importantly, I talked to sources in Japan who were stunned. A Japanese journalist who requested anonymity said, "We'd prefer they send him to Beijing." Another figure who was close to former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said the Japanese are understated and gracious. Rahm Emanuel is neither. Historically, presidents have turned to famous and revered elder statesmen as ambassadors. The late Walter Mondale was a former vice president and presidential nominee of the Democratic Party. Democrat Mike Mansfield and Republican Howard Baker both served as majority leader of the U.S. Senate. They were well-liked and well-received in Tokyo. Based on the early reports that are coming out, this will not be the case with an ambassador, Rahm Emanuel.
John, the attacks this week on Israel by Hamas, and we also have attacks on Israel by the Squad.
Yes, that's true. What we are seeing, Rick, is a dichotomy between different factions of the Democratic Party regarding Israel and the Palestinians. President Biden is an old-school Democrat. He follows in the tradition from Harry Truman to Bill Clinton and Barack Obama of being a friend of Israel first. And indeed, the carefully calibrated statements from the White House inevitably contain the phrase, "Israel has a right to defend itself." Now, many in the progressive wing, the AOC wing of the Democratic Party, find this inappropriate for our times. They point out that the Palestinians have been shelled with rockets from Israel and that their places of worship are endangered. They want something a little bit stronger from this president. And what it comes down to is that the Democratic Party, long thought to be the party that gave Israel its statehood under President Truman and stood by Israel over the years, is divided over America's best friend in the Middle East. We're going to hear a lot more about this as time goes on.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. Watch for him on Newsmax TV. John, as always, thanks for being with us.
I thank you for having me, Rick, and this is an important weekend for me. my 19th wedding anniversary. It was 19 years ago. My life changed for the better, and I am blessed to be married all this time and blessed to be married to the woman I love beyond words.
That is so nice, and congratulations to you and Colleen, John. She's a lovely lady. It is 7:19. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL, and we're going to talk to Cheryl Atkinson next. Tony Schaefer's coming up, KT McFarland, but first off, we've got Al BD in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In D.C., on 295, 395, 695, with the tunnels and bridges included, there isn't any construction. I have no reports of any accidents. So you'll be at speed. Now into Maryland on the Beltway, inner loop and outer loop. From Prince George's County through Montgomery County, bridge to bridge, you won't be tapping the brakes. It's all clear at speed. Between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95, nothing to report northbound and southbound. And in Prince George's County on Route 50 between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, all clear eastbound and westbound. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny this morning, cool conditions to start your day, but temperatures will warm up into the mid-70s through the afternoon. We'll see a hit or miss shower, but for the most part, very isolated. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s. Clouds will increase after midnight, mostly cloudy into your Sunday morning. I think we'll be dry tomorrow morning, but we will have the possibility for some afternoon showers. Could even have a couple rumbles of thunder. Not quite as warm either. High temperatures around 70 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
We've inched up to 48 degrees in the nation's capital, 720 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL.
Washington's Mall, WMAL, where Washington comes to talk.
The Saturday Morning Update continues. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined each week by Cheryl Atkinson. She is the author of Slanted, and she is the host of Full Measure, which is every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock on ABC7. Cheryl, good morning. It's always wonderful to have you with us.
Thank you. Good morning.
So many stories about the effects of COVID on us and the impact on the country. One I had not heard about or thought about would be an uptick in child trafficking. What are you finding there?
Well, it turns out, according to legal experts, that the idea that kids have been staying home, kind of isolated more to themselves, adults have been staying home and working on the computer, there's an uptick in child sex trafficking that starts online. And, you know, really the full numbers are impossible to know because some kids are entirely off the radar who might be getting trafficked. But just the cases that we know about, this is a huge human problem, maybe one of the biggest ones we're facing today, but you just don't hear that much about it. So I try to dig into the problem and get at what's behind it and how big it is and how far it goes.
Well, how far does it go in broad terms? I mean, we might be surprised, I'm afraid.
Yes, you know, you expect it in some dark corners, you know, where gangs are operating. There's a lot of concern about kids being moved across the southern border. But, you know, it's also a well-known open secret, according to some, in the entertainment industry. Child sex trafficking, not just by strangers and organized gangs, but by people who the kids know and trust. And we'll hear Sunday from some Hollywood insiders who say, this is something that's known that a lot of people have been looking the other way about for a very long time in Hollywood.
I want to turn to some stories we've heard about the Ukraine border. And it doesn't get a lot of attention, but it could be significant for us. Tell us about the tension there and what it could mean for the U.S.
Well, I'm not an expert in this, which is why we got Scott Thuma to look into it. He's going to tell us more on Sunday. But as you probably have heard, Russia is behaving in a way that some say is increasingly aggressive toward its former Soviet partner, Ukraine. And apparently there are concerns by Russia, longstanding concerns, that Ukraine is getting closer and closer to the West, that it might want to join Western alliances and organizations that Russia feels will threaten it. So there is this sort of a ruffling of feathers going on the Russia-Ukraine border. So what Scott's going to do is explain this to us in simple terms, what the conflict is about, and then tell us why there's U.S. interest there. Because, you know, some people say that Russia President Putin is trying to gauge the West and test the West with these actions and see where we stand. This is something that Biden has weighed in on, President Biden. So, again, Scott will tell us what he's learned and try to explain to us why it matters.
Something else that's likely to impact us from COVID that we probably haven't thought about, but you have, and that is the medical equipment in the hospitals. We saw the emergency rooms and the hospital ICUs overwhelmed, the equipment as well as the people at maximum capacity. What does that mean in terms of maintenance and the future of this equipment?
Well, I really love digging into stories that maybe most people don't know much about and kind of telling people something that is a story people aren't peddling and trying to get on the news, quite the opposite in some cases. This is called the Right to Repair, and it's about this high-tech medical equipment that, as you rightly mentioned, is so valuable in times of crisis at hospitals and so on. But it requires specialization in terms of repair when these machines need fixing or something goes wrong. And there's apparently a whole subculture of dispute going on because some manufacturers do not let regular repair technicians fix these machines. They keep the profits to themselves. They make tons of money per hour to go fix the machines. And there are independent repairmen who are saying, look, these companies have to let go of their instruction manuals, in essence, that talk about how these things, these machines need to be repaired so that more people can get in the game and get these things back online faster when they go down. Right now, sometimes there's a backlog and a waiting list that goes on for months, if not years, with the machine sitting idle waiting for a manufacturer service technician to come out and fix it. So that's a lot of wasted time, and in some cases, people seem to think it's even costing lives.
Those stories and more tomorrow morning, Full Measure. That's ABC 7 at 10 o'clock. And you've got a great story at CherylEtkisson.com on the investigation into origins of COVID-19. We're seeing more and more in the news about it. Congressman Mike Gallagher has been very vocal about it. But I would just encourage people to check that story out. It's a video as well as text with a lot of detail. Brief summary, Cheryl, what would you say is one of the more significant findings there?
Well, the notion that's been passed around for a year that the lab theory, the idea COVID-19 could have come from a Chinese lab, we've been told that that was debunked and public health officials don't think that's true. I found that I would say the greater majority of health officials have come around to thinking it is true, despite what you've heard in the media. And also, I get at the bottom of the funding. Yes, the United States, with taxpayer money, did fund this controversial gain-of-function research that you'll read about and see about if you look at that. And it was a problem. National Institutes of Health approved it. Dr. Fauci's institute specifically funded this research that was done in conjunction with the lead virologist from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. So you can see the documentation. Despite what you hear, it really tells you with the documents what's happened.
And that's all on the homepage at CherylEtkisson.com. Exclusive investigation separating rumor from fact on COVID-19's origin. Cheryl, thank you very much.
Thank you.
7:30 news on the way. Then we're back with Tony Schaefer and KT McFarland on the Saturday morning update.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Heather Curtis. Good news if you're sick of wearing a mask. Maryland and Virginia ended their mask mandates effective today. Maryland Governor Larry Hogan.
Businesses across the state and other workplaces are obviously free to set their own policies with respect to masking.
The same is true in Virginia. Masks are still required in schools in both states and on public transit. Today, all capacity limits on businesses are being lifted in Maryland. Virginia Governor Ralph Northam says some restrictions will be loosened today. 100 people are allowed at indoor social gatherings and 250 at outdoor ones.
May the 28th, we will lift all of Virginia's mitigation restrictions on capacity and distancing in businesses and public spaces.
China takes a major step forward in its ambitious goals in space. The country landed a spacecraft on Mars for the first time today. WMAL Sports, the Wizards clinch a spot in the playoff tournament with a 120-105 win over the Cavaliers. The Nats beat the Diamondbacks 17-2. Game one of the Capitals' first-round playoff series against the Bruins starts tonight in Capital One Arena. About 5,000 fans will be there. The puck drops at 7:15. Fans are back at Pimlico Racecourse today for the Preakness. Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit was cleared yesterday to run the second leg of the Triple Crown after failing a post-Derby drug test. Post time, 6:47. Traffic and weather next. WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
On the Virginia side of the Beltway, on the inner loop and on the outer loop right now, there isn't any delays, and I have no reports of any construction being set up, so you will be traveling at the posted speed limit. In Fairfax County, on 66, eastbound lanes are clear and the westbound lanes are clear. 95 in Virginia, that's running really well between the Beltway and Fredericksburg, northbound and southbound. And if you're headed to any one of the airports, BWI, National, or Dulles this morning, the roads leading up to the terminals, no delays, so you should be able to hit your gate on time. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
A fair amount of sunshine to start your weekend. We will see partly cloudy skies by the afternoon. Temperatures very warm to start the weekend as well, into the mid-70s. Now we could have a few pop-up hit-or-miss showers. It'll be very isolated. Later on tonight, clearing out, we will see clouds return as we head overnight and into early Sunday. Lows tomorrow morning into the 50s. We see high temperatures tomorrow afternoon around 70 degrees. Could see the possibility for some scattered showers, maybe even a few rumbles of thunder. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on WMAL.
Back again, just like old times. Join me, Dan Bongino, live on WMAL, weekdays at noon, beginning May 24th.
7:37, Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the author of Operation Dark Heart. He is the host of the Thought to Action podcast at the London Center for Policy Research. Tony, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Rick. Always great to join you.
Well, we saw the hack on the Colonial Pipeline. Now, the National Security Agency Director General Paul Nakasone testifying on U.S. cyberspace operations at a hearing at the end of the week before the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Cyber, Innovative Technologies, and Information Systems. On the agenda, the SolarWinds hack, Microsoft Exchange, and Colonial Pipeline. We saw the huge impact on us here in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia. CNN reports that in D.C. this morning, 80% of the pumps are dry. You were looking at this stuff way back when, in 2016. You had a conference and a workshop on the same cyber sovereignty issues back in 2016 at the U.S. Army War College. What are we missing here, Tony?
Well, we're missing the fact that we went through all of this. As a matter of fact, it was three different parts. It was February 15, June 15, and then June 16. It's a series of them. We put it all together. And by the way, NSA attended, FDIC, the Fed, everybody, private sector, we all got together and recognized that the very issue we're facing was something that we as a nation were going to have to resolve. And despite the fact we had General Nakasone testify, let me tell you a little secret. They don't know what they're going to do because of what has happened within the government, Rick. They've broken down by domain responsibility. So theoretically, the military is only going to defend the dot mils and dot govs of the world. And then you've got some overlap with DHS regarding the dot gov piece. And then from that point, it's all kind of like, well, who's responsible for the dot coms, you know? And this sovereignty issue is something that has not been resolved because we have a huge bureaucracy. A lot of these bureaucracies don't want to be tagged. So I would argue as much that because you've seen such a tepid and ill-focused response by the federal, you know, by the government, by the Biden administration, I blame a lot on Biden and who's in charge, but I blame mostly on the large bureaucracy we have seen resist taking responsibility. The FBI has been brought up. It's like, you know, the FBI does have some cyber capability, but most of that goes back to NSA. So this is something that we cannot neglect any longer. And look, the thing I just mentioned, people can go look up. You can Google it. It's the U.S. Army War College Center for Strategic Leadership, the Rethinking Sovereignty in the Context of Cyberspace. Anybody can go Google this and read what we came up with and what we talked about. So a lot of folks who are involved in that are still in government doing things. So I recommend people go look at that, and they demand that the Congress act to try to make the government focus on this. Because, Rick, to your point, this was one pipeline shut down for a week that's already been restored, and yet now we're going to be living with the consequence of this event for probably at least another week. And just imagine if this was not a single pipeline, this was a series of things that either hackers or some natural event took out. What would people do if they had a pipeline down for a month or had a power grid down for several weeks? And the catastrophic and cascading effects of that in the terms of just-in-time logistics, just-in-time food, and communications. I don't know. I'm not saying this to be dramatic. I'm not saying this to get people worried. But society is far more vulnerable than we fully understand. And I hope people take this opportunity to personally prepare, get their own kits, get some food in the basement, get some water set aside just in case. Be sure you have adequate means to defend yourself. These are all things to consider. But this should, I would hope, wakes people up and demand action to make sure that this doesn't happen again.
Well, we've seen many of these. We've seen hospitals hit. We've seen police departments hit, the Metropolitan Police Department hit. What do we know about these hackers? How do we identify? And I don't know if you can apprehend them when they're in Russia. I don't think Putin's going to go pick them up and extradite them. But what can we do about this?
Well, I don't necessarily believe it's Russia. Russia has, they develop a lot of tools, but it's because if someone says it's Russia, doesn't mean it's necessarily Russia. Again, people have to do this in two ways. They have to be responsible for their own defense. Individual business owners needs to examine vulnerabilities. And at the national level, we need to be running operations to get inside these groups, to get inside what they're doing, anticipate it, try to detect it. We have a very expensive national security industry. This is one of the key issues that we've recognized is more likely to touch the lives of every human being than any other single threat, even more than terrorism. I actually said at this conference that cyber is the one thing that will touch everybody's life more directly than terrorism ever thought about. And as a matter of fact, you can argue this is a form of terrorism, but clearly this is something that everybody has to be focused on, again, from the individual level up to the corporate and national level and all the bureaucracies.
You talked about preparation, kind of around the house. But what would happen if they knocked out, let's say, our email exchanges for a week? They held them ransomware. Or if there were something else like our cell service, do we have to be thinking in terms of how we would communicate with family? How would we communicate with business? I mean, we're not just talking about food and water around the house here.
No, look, several years ago, you and I were both in the area when they had the derecho come through, when that large straight-line storm came through, and communications 911 service went down for, in some cases, 2 and 3 days. So this is no small issue. And, yeah, you need to have thought through and reacted with your family what to do next. Most of the people I know in the area have thought through this and have some level of idea. But you need to figure out how you're going to communicate without a cell phone, how you're going to navigate without GPS. All these things come into play. So I just hope people recognize that they need to demand more from their government and be prepared at the individual level if necessary.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer at the London Center for Policy Research. And, Tony, I mentioned the podcast. What's the topic this week?
So we're going through some of what we're talking about right now. We're going to be revising that. We've done some more on the Second Amendment because, let me tell you, if we have a shutdown of this sort of thing and things get bad, you're going to want to be armed legally to defend your family. So we talk about that a little bit this week, too. So thanks for having me, Rick.
You betcha. And you can find the podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you.
Thank you.
7:44, the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We've got Al BD in the WMAL Traffic Center. Then we're back with KT McFarland.
On the Maryland side of the Beltway, in Prince George's County through Montgomery County, on the inner loop and on the outer loop, bridge to bridge, no delays. You're not going to be tapping the brakes. You'll be traveling at the posted speed limit. between the two beltways on the BW Parkway and on 95. It's all clear northbound and southbound. In Prince George's County on Route 50, between the Beltway and the Bay Bridge, east and west is clear. At the Bay Bridge, two lanes headed east, three lanes are coming west. And on 270 in Montgomery County, between the Beltway and Frederick, that's good. And now, from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
Mostly sunny this morning, cool conditions to start your day, but temperatures will warm up into the mid-70s through the afternoon. We'll see a hit or miss shower, but for the most part, very isolated. Later on tonight, lows back in the 50s. Clouds will increase after midnight, mostly cloudy into your Sunday morning. I think we'll be dry tomorrow morning, but we will have the possibility for some afternoon showers. Could even have a couple rumbles of thunder. Not quite as warm either. High temperatures around 70 degrees. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett at the StormWatch 7 Weather Center.
48 degrees in the nation's capital, 746 on the Saturday morning update. It is the Saturday morning update on WMAL. So glad you've joined us. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are joined by KT McFarland, and it is always an honor to have KT join us. She has such a distinguished career in serving government all the way back into the Nixon, Ford, and, of course, Bush administrations. And KT has authored a wonderful book that will, you know, kind of walk you through how things went in the Trump administration, how things go in government in D.C. It's called Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning, and it's an honor and a pleasure.
Well, I was stunned this week when I was watching the president's response to the Colonial Pipeline hack. Now, I know that you're in New York for the most part, and often in Florida, but you weren't in the Southeast this week when we were hit here in the Maryland, D.C., Virginia area. And I saw a line of about 50 cars trying to get into a Costco gas station because the Sunoco station was shut down. It's a pretty serious thing. And the president was asked a question about the hackers. And I just want to play this one little clip because the president only had one word to say when he was asked if he would take retaliatory action against the hackers. Here's how it went.
Will you consider doing any kind of retaliatory cyber attacks to shut down these criminals? Are you ruling that out?
No.
No. Now, wouldn't a president say, we have all options on the table, we are taking this very seriously, and we are going to bring these people to justice?
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it at all. Maybe he just didn't understand what he was saying, because he just guaranteed that the ransomware price for the next hack attack is just going way up, and more countries and more groups are going to join that cyber blackmail profession. It's good money. It's easy money, and he's now just said no repercussions. So it was absolutely the wrong answer to give on a lot of directions. The other thing that is so upsetting, he was asked earlier about, well, do you think the Russians were responsible? And he said, well, the people might have been in Moscow or been in Russia, but it wasn't the Russian government. Come on. You weren't born yesterday. The way Putin gets around these things, he's really good at deflecting responsibility. So whether it's the little green men who were invading Ukraine, who were really Russian soldiers, but they changed their uniforms and they removed their ID cards from their wallets. Those are the same people, same sort of thing, where the people are doing the hacks. I mean, do they have cards saying they're members of the Russian government in their wallet? Probably not. But are they operating with Putin's full knowledge? Absolutely, without a doubt. This is a totalitarian surveillance state. There's nobody in that country that's doing something that the head of the country doesn't know about, especially because the head of the country is former head of the KGB. I mean, you know, come on. Born yesterday? So, no, I think that the serious thing, and I would fault Republicans and Democrats, is nobody ever addresses this cyber thing. After the fact, they sort of investigate the forensics, they clean up what happened afterwards, but they're nobody's forward-looking. These attacks are going to escalate, ransomware attacks, the price is going to go way up, cyber attacks, and we're at a disadvantage because our industries, which are the most vulnerable, the critical infrastructure, are all privately owned. So what do we need to do? We need a comprehensive public-private partnership to defend U.S. companies, the private sector, especially the infrastructure. Two, we need to set standards for the private sector to follow. A lot of companies don't have adequate cyber defense because it's expensive. I mean, one senior executive of a cyber defense company said to me, well, you know, companies don't want to pay for it because it eats into their profit motive. So what they do is they buy insurance in case anybody sues them after the fact. And I think also the President of the United States needs to set a clear policy of what is cyber warfare. If Vladimir Putin can offload and subcontract out a cyberware attack against American critical infrastructure, is that some kind of a gray area of warfare? I don't know, but we need to have a comprehensive look at it, and we need to make clear to adversaries what they're responsible for in their own land and what we're going to do about it if they breach it.
Well, KT, I want to turn to the situation in Gaza. And this week's violence is being reported as the worst since 2014. At least 136 people have been killed this week. 10 people so far today, Israeli airstrikes on targets in the Gaza Strip. And if you could give us a little background on the relationship of Hamas to the broader Palestinian population and also the relationship between Hamas and Iran.
You know, first of all, I want to just compliment our Israeli friends. It was a brilliant military operation. So what they did is their public affairs official announced that ground forces, Israeli ground forces, were going into Gaza. So what did that do? It sent the Hamas, the corrupt, you know, Hamas leaders, military and civilian, who usually hide behind women and children if there's an attack coming. This time they just skedaddled. And they went underground to fortified bunkers in the tunnels underground. Well, it turns out the Israelis weren't having a ground invasion. So the Hamas leaders fled unnecessarily. But what the Israelis did was target the tunnels, which is where the little rats were caught in the trap. So I think good for the Israelis. Maybe they've sort of deleted the generation of bad guys for at least a couple of years. But the whole thing is such a tragedy. You know, Trump left office, Rick. The Middle East was at peace. The Arabs and the Israelis, they signed the Abraham Accords, which not only had peace between Israel and the Arabs, but it had a side effect. And the side effect was it marginalized those corrupt, aged Palestinian terrorist leaders who were in their 80s. For decades, those people have held the entire region hostage. And these leaders stay in power, and they have for decades, only because they promised to kill Jews and destroy Israel. And they were always funded by Arab states and by Iran. So what Trump did, the side effect of the Abraham Accords, was that the Arab states stopped funding the Palestinian group, terrorist groups, leaving only Iran to fund them. And Iran didn't have the money to fund them because of the sanctions that we imposed in the Trump administration. So what does Biden do? He comes in and reverses everything, hates Trump so much, even the good stuff gets reversed. And so he starts giving money back to the Palestinians. What do they use the money for? To make war. He has a nuclear deal with the Iranians, which he's sort of dropping sanctions left and right, presumably, according to press reports. And what do the Iranians do? They say, yippee, we can now go fund the terrorists again. So they send missiles to Hamas in Gaza. And so what does Hamas do? They use the missile. I mean, it just is so odd. We've now put the spigot back on for all the terrorist groups that Iran funds in the Middle East. It's a tragedy. Didn't have to happen, and it's going to, you know, here we go, back in the cycle of violence. Palestinians attack, Israel responds, you kind of mow the grass for another couple of years. A couple of years later, Palestinians attack again. But the real losers, the Palestinian people.
KT McFarland, always appreciate your perspectives, KT. And again, we encourage people to check out Revolution. You've spent so much time in those meetings, you know, as the Deputy National Security Director, and you have the expertise, you have the background on it, and it's all pretty logical. The way you lay this stuff out every week, it's all common sense logic, and still, unfortunately, the folks in the new administration just seem to be so naive on so many fronts. And I'm sorry we don't have more time to go into it this morning, but you're just so synced at just presenting it. And it shouldn't be that tough to figure these things out in terms of how we address them. I know they're difficult issues, but the administration, the southern border.
Rick, it's not rocket science. It just takes common sense. And that's the one thing that most of these politicians check at the door, common sense. They're not left with any common sense. They're left with other interests, but not common sense.
K.T. McFarland, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People is the book. Thank you so much, K.T., as always.
Pleasure and an honor.
That's it for the Saturday morning update. And Garden Sense follows the 8 o'clock news right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. America's reopening. Hear it here. 105.9 FM, WMAL. A Cumulus station.